Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Hello, I'm David Hepworth. Welcome to the latest in our series of Word podcasts for the festive season. Coming up, we've got a couple of numbers from The Miserable Rich. But first of all, continuing our Round Britain roundup of some of our key contributors, I've been talking to John Norton and Mark Hodkinson about the books, DVDs and records that have made the greatest impression on them this year. But first, I began north of the border with Graham Thompson.
Good morning.
How's the weather?
Horrible. It's windy and wet and grey and fairly standard Edinburgh fare, I'm afraid.
Okay. Let's start with your book of the year or your reading of the year.
Well, the book I enjoyed the most and got the most out of and have already reread is The House of Silt by Anthony Horowitz. And it's a new Sherlock Holmes novel. There have been a few Holmes retreads over the years. This is the first one that was fully endorsed by the Conan Doyle Estate. And it's just a terrifically, ridiculously enjoyable read. I think for anyone who loves those stories and loves those characters and loves the evocation of that particular time and place, you'll get an immense amount out of it. All those characters are in there, Lestrade, Mycroft, Moriarty. And it's just... It's played with a very straight bat, which I think is the way you have to do Holmes. You know, although it's kind of patently ridiculous and slightly tongue in cheek, Horowitz understands that you need to treat these characters absolutely seriously. And the thing I love about these books, and I suppose I'm not a Londoner, and I have a kind of outsider romantic view of that city, and I love that sort of fog-bound Edwardian romantic vibe that is conjured up in those books. And I think that. So any book or series that has a city as a character in itself always has legs and you can always return to it and plug straight into that. And that's what he does. And I think, you know, you look at The Wire or Ian Rankin's Rebus set in Edinburgh, they all understand that the city plays a part in it. And I just love that sense of kind of mystery that's conjured up in that. So that's the one I enjoyed the most.
It's interesting. I reread some old Sherlock Holmes recently, and I found the plots ridiculous, but the background absolutely gripping. You know, the idea of London and the routine of the characters and so forth, I found enormously attractive.
Absolutely. I think the plots are almost incidental, and as you say, they stretch belief way past breaking point. But it's character-driven, and it's atmosphere-driven, And he really gets that. So I mean, it's for anyone who enjoys or has enjoyed those books, I would recommend it thoroughly.
So
dive into it.
What's that called again? The Silk Road?
The House of Silk.
The House of Silk.
Anthony Horowitz.
Yeah. By Anthony Horowitz. Okay, how about a DVD or a film that you've enjoyed particularly this year?
Well, it's another atmosphere-driven thing, really. And it's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which was... I think just an amazing piece of work, partly because it was so slow and so atmospheric. And I mean, I love Le Carre, I love those books. They're all kind of about the uncertainties and inner yearnings of certain types of men. And I think this captured that. It understood that it was about the characters. The plot was kind of incidental. I know a lot of people who hadn't read the book didn't have a clue what was going on in that film. But I think you could still just kind of wallow in the great performances and the whole atmosphere of that time and that kind of sense of unease and betrayal and these things going on and these people trying to desperately hold on to a certain way of life. I'm not a big fan of plots. I think they kind of get in the way almost of the acting.
It's interesting you should say this because Tinker Tailor, I read in the book and I remember the Alec Guinness adaptation and recently listened to the Radio 4 Complete Smiley, which is a wonderful dramatization. And every time I come to these things, the plot is completely fresh to me because I actually don't remember any of the things that happened. I just want to be in the atmosphere. I want to revisit that atmosphere. It's interesting.
Absolutely. And I think I find these days, in most books I read, I find the plot, generally in the last third of any book, I find it becomes deeply unsatisfying because you just, it, 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 it has a sense of somebody trying to wrap too many things up. And I like these things that are quite open-ended and that are character-driven. So, I mean, I thought that he pulled that off really, really well in that film. And, the lead performance by Gary Oldman, I think, is superb.
Okay, so that's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. What about a record?
My favourite record is Floriat by Mara Carlisle. I don't know if you're aware of that record, but it seemed to me to show the possibilities of what can still be done with the album without seeming to try too hard or make too big a point about it. She's classically trained. She throws all sorts of things into her music, jazz, English classical music, sort of vaudeville, electronica. Her songs have all these interesting points of departure, but you know, ultimately the music is just a direct product of who she is. And
so what's her background?
She's classically trained. She was in a band called Played, who were on Warp Records, and she was in the Marty Herbert big band. She played keyboards for Sophie Ellis-Bextor. She's done all these interesting things. She seems to be one of these people who likes to collaborate in all kind of different genres. This is her second record, and it was made in 2008. It was delayed. Lots of kind of labyrinthine record industry wrangles. It didn't come out till this year. And so there's all these interesting things going on. She described one song as Elizabethan ska. But there's a real poppy, playful aspect, a real kind of joie de vivre to the whole thing. It's not hard work. And there's Vaughan Williams in there next to Hot Chip. It's it sounds clever, but actually it's very natural and organic and playful, and it just sounds right. And it's just the record I've kept coming back to over and over again. There's so many things in there, I think, that you can get out of it. And it's really enjoyable, I think, which is the main thing as well.
And you found yourself able to just put it on and listen to the whole album?
Well, that's it. Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's incredibly fresh. It's got so many things invested in it. It's again, I suppose it's very atmospheric. It changes, it changes mood from one song to the next, but it's got this thread of her creativity running through it. So it hasn't got that kind of gratuitous, eclectic thing that some people like to do. You know, it's not, I don't think it has got an eye on being too clever. And it works, yeah, straight from start to finish. So,
okay, well, thanks very much for that, Graham. And all your recommendations, and have a good Christmas.
And you, happy Christmas.
That's Mara Carlisle, the choice of Graham Thompson in Edinburgh. And now from Edinburgh, we move down to Yorkshire to Mark Hopkinson. Good morning, Mark.
Morning, David.
And where are you exactly?
I'm in a small town called Todmorden, which is on the border with Lancashire. So roughly between Leeds and Manchester, right in the heart of the Pennines. And it's a very wet and cold and frosty morning, actually. Not pleasant at all.
It's one of those places that BBC traffic reports tend to refer to as Todmorden, don't they?
Yeah, I love that, because we all have a good chuckle. It's actually Todmorden, with, if you can imagine, an apostrophe after the end, going to den, so it's Todmorden rather than Todmorden.
Absolutely.
A good way to assess people out, actually, how good their geography is.
Right, so let's talk about your books of the year. What have you been reading this year?
With Running Pomona, I spend a lot of time poring over manuscripts or editing other people's works, and I realised, as I was thinking about this earlier, that I've not actually read many contemporary novels, certainly not this year. One I did enjoy was Edna O'Brien's book of short stories called Saints and Sinners. I think with Edna, you always know what you're going to get, which is brilliantly written, really telling insights, just a really good writer. And not new authors these days are not given the luxury of short stories, because publishers generally don't feel that they sell. collections of short stories. So you've got to find them. You've either got to go via America and find American writers because they still believe in the genre over there, or read writers like Edna O'Brien. Another book I enjoyed, I'm massively into sport, obviously, and I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but the book by Paul Lake, the footballer that played for Manchester City in the late 80s and early 90s. Are you familiar with him?
This is about how his career was pretty much ended by an injury, wasn't it, when he looked immensely promising and then it all fell away.
Yeah, there was talk of him. I think he captained certainly the City U team and reserve team, came to the first team and was called up to an England training session by would have been Graham Taylor that was manager then. Incredibly promising footballer, a strong lad, a kind of a ball winner, and someone that could read the game. Anyway, he got an awful injury, and the book just details what it's like to be injured. I mean, it's not really a sports book. It's about this relationship with hope, where he's constantly dreaming of comebacks, and you just know, obviously, because most of us know the story anyway, but it's still absolutely heartbreaking, and it's, it can talk about it under the skin of sport. It just shows you how devastating it can be, because he's constantly got this battle with, you know, hoping to return, and then he's injured again, and he's literally months and months in rehabilitation, and then just on a simple training session, he can't even run around the cones, and it's very honest. He suffered depression, and it goes through all the lot. I mean, it's certainly not a happy read, but in terms of balancing the kind of general view of sport, it's an absolutely fantastic book.
While we're talking about sports books, I read this year the Andre Agassi memoir. Is it called Open? I think it is. And that starts with a devastating account of just how painful it is to be Andre Agassi. You know, it starts with him waking up in the morning on the final of a major tournament, and he has to sleep on the hotel floor because simply he can't be comfortable in any bed at all because his body is just so shattered by 10 years of playing top-class sport. We don't realise how fortunate we are not having that kind of talent, I suppose. So
yeah, I interviewed Paul years ago for the Times when he was on one of his comebacks, and he's a very strong personality, and he was someone that I thought, well, you'll have a second chance because you'll either manage or you'll do something with your life. But the book ends, and I think he's now an ambassador at Manchester City, where the kind of the meet and greet thing that they do. But he bailed out on sport altogether, and I was surprised at that. And the book, to me, doesn't really have a happy ending. I think we get used to that. That's the kind of narrative that instinctively we feel is going to come up, but I still don't think his life is back on track all these years on.
No.
And I think, I'm not sure whether it helps that he's held in such regard at City and he can still be part of it, because while you're reading it, you feel like he should really divorce himself and, you know, from the sport and do something else, which I'm sure he's capable of doing. He's a very intelligent lad.
So, anyway, what about something you've been watching this year, or a film or DVD that you particularly enjoyed?
My favourite, I've got two teenage sons, so I tend to veer towards films that we can watch together. It's just how the house works, I think. But one that I really enjoyed was The Way Back. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes, I've seen that. Go on, explain that.
It's a Peter Weir film, and it's based on a book that, when I was at school, I think we did two books. One was Kev, and the other was The Long Walk by Slavimir Alex, I think I pronounced that correctly. And the book really lived with me because it's about this guy that escapes from the Siberian gulag, and he walks 4,000 miles across Siberia, through over the Gobi Desert, through all kinds of, you know, adventures, and eventually arrives in India months and months later. It's been Peter Weir, the director, changed the plot and made it that it's now about seven or eight people that escape from the gulag. But it's just brilliantly shot, and it reminds me a lot of a film called Into the Wild, which was directed by Sean Penn. And that was the story of a young lad called Christopher Candlemass, who left home and did a summer kind of journey, but he went through Alaska. I don't know whether it's just that I'm getting older, but this idea of walking a long way and getting away and escaping, and just kind of this return to nature theme. I think I was... another book I've recently reread was The Shining Levels, which is about a bloke that returns to the Lake District and just lives in a wood. I don't know why this theme's developed, but it's something that I'm really interested in.
So that's The Way Back, Peter Weir film. And while we're talking about Peter Weir, if there's anybody who hasn't seen Master and Commander, that's the thing to buy for yourself for Christmas. That's the ideal thing to sit down, particularly in a father's retreat, and watch Master and Commander. Do you know that film?
No, I've read about it, but I've seen it.
You've got to do it. Have you any more films, Mark? No?
I enjoyed Submarine. I thought the music particularly was fantastic. You know, that kind of study of childhood and adolescence, I don't think we do very often over here in the UK. I think you run out of ideas two-thirds of the way through, but generally stood up and was interesting. I was thinking about the more stylized films, more the kind of obvious Hollywood ones, and Black Swan stood out for that. I don't think it was particularly a great story or you know, fantastic dialogue, but just as a piece of work and the constant tie editing and the whole size of the film, I think made it very watchable.
Okay, so what... go on.
Documentary-wise, I enjoyed Fire in Babylon, the documentary about the West Indian cricket team, because I still am a big cricket fan, and it's interesting when you've seen something as a child, and some of those cricketers are my heroes, Andy Roberts, Colin Croft, and then all the England team with that era, Bob Willis and David Steele, Derek Randall, and then just to really have it deconstructed in such detail and properly peopled rather than just viewed as a game, which I did when I obviously watched on TV as a child, I found fascinating.
It's very good. And the interesting thing I heard about it subsequent to the release was that they actually interviewed the likes of Boycott and Botham. They interviewed the opposition and then didn't use any of it in the finished film. It didn't suit their narrative, didn't suit the film, the story they wanted to tell. Anyway, it's certainly worth seeing. So what about a piece of music?
Well, I've got three albums of the year because I couldn't really separate them. they're all quite similar in a way, and I think it reveals my... we've got the new wave legacy, I suppose you call it, for want of a better description. I like the Vaccines album, just because it's kind of like a huge engine that started up and really throbs away with some brilliant tunes. Reminds me of the Ramones, the Pixies, lots and lots of really good groups. And then a band from San Francisco called The Girls, and the album's called Father, Son, Holy Ghost. I don't know if you're aware of them, but it's the main guy, Christopher Owens. His parents were a member of the San Francisco cult, so he's had this, I think they're called Children of God. I think he's obviously had a very strange childhood, and there's lots and lots of things gone into the music. It's dark and it's light and it's experimental, but also tuneful. And my third album, Joint Top, is The Horrors Skein, which again is the kind of alternative college rock legacy, but redone, I suppose, and yeah, that's really good, of course.
Mark, thanks very much for talking to us. Have a lovely Christmas.
And you, David, thanks a lot.
You have been listening to the free feed of the Word podcast. The full album-length version is only available to subscribers to the magazine. To sign up and to hear the rest of this podcast, go to www.wordpodcast.co.uk.